Having enough people and having it past 2:15, we'll start the meeting. And today we have the science, starting with the Science Museum of Minnesota. Dr. Jolie. Oh, there you are.
Good morning, Chair Kahn, members. I'm Dr. Eric Jolly, President of the Science Museum of Minnesota. Seated with me is Brenda Rainey, Director of Government Relations, and Mike Day, Senior Vice President for Museum Enterprises of the Museum.
Okay.
Very good.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'd like to take just a moment to discuss the Science Museum and give it a context, and then we will have time for Mike and Brenda to fill you in on our exciting plans and our history with Legacy, as well as save some time for question and answer. 105 years ago, at the Minnesota Club, inside of the Capitol at that time, a group of citizens gathered and came up with several of what they thought were great ideas for the future of Minnesota. One of those great ideas was founding the Science Museum of Minnesota. And for 105 years, the Science Museum of Minnesota has been the repository of the state's treasures and has been the state's storyteller. Today, the Science Museum of Minnesota houses the largest Somali artifact collection in the world, and talks about our rich heritage as a point of immigration. We have the largest publicly accessible collection of Hmong artifacts in the world. And we have an incredible collection of American Indian artifacts, including tremendous relics from the Whipple Collection in commemoration of Minnesota's long history in the Native community. We use objects to tell stories. And our storytellers have included many great Minnesotans, including our first professional storyteller, playwright August Wilson. We developed the first science theater, but we also developed incredible science films and programming. The Science Museum of Minnesota has produced more Omni large screen films than all other science museums in North America combined. Included in that is the only Omni Theater film ever created exclusively in Minnesota. I am delighted to be able to steward this incredible legacy of storytelling, of collecting and preservation, of our history, of science, and of inspiration. I have an incredible staff that makes all of this possible, and with the help of legacy funds, we have made it available to ever more Minnesotans, reaching across the entire state with stories, artifacts, and opportunities. Today, our storytelling format through exhibits is itself becoming an artifact of the legacy of the state. Our exhibit on race made a difference across Minnesota and is now making a difference across the nation. It is now Minnesota's story of an exhibit which others echo. They tell the story of how great we are. I want to take some time to share with you how we tell those stories and how legacy helps us do that, and have my staff talk about what our future is in preserving the legacy of 105 years of Minnesota's collections, stories, and science.
Okay, I'll interrupt for a minute and call the meeting to order because we do have a quorum, and Representative McDonald, who's been sitting there very alertly, moves the minutes of March 12th.
So moved. Okay.
Those in favor accepting the minutes, say aye.
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 Okay. We'll now proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will ask Brenda Rainey to speak to what we have been doing with the legacy funds which we've received to date, and which we hope you'll find we have been very careful and thoughtful stewards.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Brenda Rainey, Director of Government Relations at the Science Museum of Minnesota. I want to say thank you myself for the appropriation of arts and cultural heritage funds that we received for the current biennium. I'm pleased for this opportunity to share with the committee what we've achieved with those funds and our requests and our plans for an appropriation in the next biennium. The first project I'm going to talk about today is our American Indian Collections Project. In FY12, we used legacy funds to complete a three-year payment plan, and we closed on the purchase of a collection of American Indian objects, local and regional artifacts that were assembled originally by Bishop Henry Whipple through his relationships with Dakota and Ojibwe people during his time as a missionary in Minnesota in the mid to late 1800s. And with those objects as the foundation, we spent some time in FY12 and FY13 creating and opening a prototype exhibition that features these historic and other contemporary American Indian objects from our collections. We engaged Native American advisors and artists from around the state as part of the exhibition development team, and we included multiple areas for visitor feedback throughout the exhibition. We opened this show at the museum last month, and I want to take a chance right now to thank again Chair Kahn and Representative Erdahl for the comments they shared at the opening reception of that exhibition. In FYs 14 and 15, we plan to expand this prototype exhibition to include even more objects, more hands-on activities, and more opportunities for visitor feedback. We'd like to initiate community programming around the state to include a wider and more diverse group of Minnesotans in our American Indian programs and projects, and digitize more of the American Indian ethnology collections at the museum to make them accessible to a wider audience. The second project to share is around our school services work. We spent significant time in FY12 and 13 enhancing our programs for students and teachers in order to increase our value and relevance for these audiences. We all know about the increased expectations in the current education environment, and we know that those expectations demand increasing quality from partners like the Science Museum to provide the most quality and value. We responded to this challenge by developing a new field trip package experience that's a better fit for teachers' current needs. We used our in-house evaluation team to ask teachers what they most need and look for in a field trip. And after listening to what they told us, the result we introduced this fall was a package that we called the Big Weather Experience. Big Weather joins the Omnifilm Tornado Alley, a new museum theater production called Storms on Stage, and dedicated attention to the air and weather components on our gallery floors. These are all working together in a cohesive experience that specifically addresses Minnesota state standards for grades 3 through 8. Teachers can easily find information about this package and other field trip opportunities on our newly redesigned field trip page on our website. This page has information including an online reservation request and a host of other materials that they can easily use to prepare their students and teachers for their trip. Videos featuring actors from our live theater program share how to get ready for the trip, what to expect and where to go when you get to the museum, and answers several other common questions we hear from teachers as they plan field trips. And we're continually updating this site with more information to make planning and visiting easier for teachers and with more connections to standards to make the field trip more relevant and meaningful for their work in their classrooms. Out-of-classroom time is precious to teachers, and they need it to be the most effective and efficient it can be. And these were the kinds of features that teachers told us they needed to be able to use that out-of-classroom time best. And we're pleased to report that the response to this work has been overwhelmingly positive, both from teachers and from their students. And we're excited to include continuing this effort and creating more field trip packages in our request for funding in the next biennium. Our total legacy request for next biennium is $2.2 million. Of that, $1 million will be going specifically to the programs I just spoke about, and the remaining 1.2 is a special one-time request for funding for a project of great importance to us, and that's bringing new cutting-edge technology to our Omni Theater. And the best person to talk about that is Mike Day.
Madam Chair, members, for the record, my name is Mike Day. I have the privilege of serving as the Senior Vice President at the Science Museum of Minnesota, which responsibility includes programming, planning, and operation of the museum's Omni Theater. 35 years ago, the Science Museum of Minnesota took a leadership position by becoming only the second museum in the world to build an Omni Theater as part of its educational programming. The museum also took a leadership role in the creation of programming, premiering the Omni Theater in the fall of 1978 with an original production entitled Genesis, an ideal marriage of subject and story for this innovative medium. It was the story of plate tectonics. Since, we have documented erupting volcanoes around the Pacific Basin for a film entitled Ring of Fire. We have traveled to the eastern shore of Lake Tanganyika to produce a film on the life work of Dr. Jane Goodall. And we have produced the only Omni Theater film ever made in the state of Minnesota, a film entitled Seasons. The Science Museum of Minnesota has produced more films in this format than any other museum worldwide. The museum was also the first to magnify the educational impact of such theaters with teacher institutes developed in conjunction with the production of films. We are proud of the leadership position we have been able to take on a national scale now for more than three decades. With the Science Museum of Minnesota and museums like it around the world, we are now faced with a challenge. Our programming is built around exhibition on a unique giant dome screen using the world's largest film format. The challenge is, film is going away. Less and less of it is being manufactured. If museums stand still after more than a generation of investment in this medium, they will have no new programs to show. Our legacy will end. The Science Museum of Minnesota, however, sees this as an opportunity to once again take a national leadership position by being at the forefront of the transition from the world's best film projection system to the world's best digital projection system, to build upon the experiences we have provided audiences across our history. Science Museum of Minnesota is partnering to design and develop from the ground up a new laser light source digital projection system that will provide brightness, resolution, and contrast not only to match the standards of presentation we now have at the Science Museum's Omni Theater, but to exceed them. Moving into the digital realm will provide us capability we currently do not have. For example, we'll be able to do live programming. And we can also more easily update programs to contemporize our stories, science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and medicine. For example, with digital technology, we could have watched live the launch of the NASA rover Curiosity and its landing on Mars in August of last year. As Curiosity goes about its work, we could receive digital updates to present a Mars program that is always current. At the same time that the Science Museum of Minnesota is taking the point to lead museum Omni Theaters to a digital future, we are ensuring that we pool the financial and intellectual resources of other museums in this country to best make this transition. 3 years ago, we legally incorporated in the state of Minnesota a consortium of seven U.S. museums, all that have a long and successful history of operating Omni Theaters. This toward the development of a digital projection system and the continued production of educational programs. Included in this consortium are Chicago's Museum of Science and Industry, the St. Louis Science Center, and Boston's Museum of Science. Current film at the Omni Theater, Tornado Alley, partially filmed in Minnesota, was produced by our consortium. We are requesting one-time support of arts and cultural heritage funds for the Omni Theater Technology Project to transition from a film to a digital world. We are requesting that legacy funds support half the cost of this project, and we are asking the donative community to support the rest of this as a private-public partnership initiative. We have received positive initial response from private donors that we have already met with towards this effort. Let me take this opportunity to thank you for your previous and ongoing support. It is always inspiring when I hear your experiences with the Science Museum, whether it be taking advantage of one of our science-themed birthday parties for your children, or using our lending library of teaching artifacts provided through Science House, our teacher resource. I also appreciate the feedback that we have received regarding this initiative as being innovative. As I have indicated, the Science Museum of Minnesota has for more than three decades been a national leader with this educational medium, and taking a leadership position and being forward-thinking is where we want to continue to be. Madam Chair, at this time, Dr. Jolly, Brenda Rainey, and myself will welcome questions from you and the members of the committee.
Okay. Representative Erdl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first, I guess, questions for Mr. Day. How long have you been with the Science Museum?
Madam Chair, Representative, 35 years. I was recruited to Minnesota from a position at the Cleveland Board of Education.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Day, so you were there at the genesis of the Omni Theater.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Day. And who, is there a leader or a president of this consortium?
Madam Chair, Representative, when we legally incorporated this consortium, yes, we have a seven-member board of directors, and yes, I am the current chair of the board of this consortium.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Dave, of course, I kind of knew that. I just wanted to get that out there.
I figured that. I was waiting for you to ask him if he was 10 when he initially came here.
I just wanted to comment you know, that I know that Chair Kahn has as well, and I've had the several opportunities over the last few years to take advantage of your program and commend you for the very fine job you're doing. You know, with the it was very important, I think, to preserve and obtain the Whipple collection. You know, something that is so innately Minnesotan. Should not have been dispersed across the country. So I commend you for your commitment to that. The film Tornado Alley and what's the name of the vehicle again?
Madam Chair, Representative, that would be the Tornado Intercept Vehicle, the TIV.
Yes. I didn't get to ride that, but it looked like a very interesting vehicle. And also, you know,
why are you so much braver than me?
I would like to go into a tornado with that. Wouldn't it be fun?
I said you're so much braver than I am. Okay.
Yeah, the not with legislation, Representative. But and your work with school groups. I know that there's a group just last week from Litchfield, St. Philip's Elementary School that went there. I wish I could have gone for pizza with them, but I had another commitment. So again, commending you for the work you're doing. What is the next film that's going to be coming to the Omni Theater?
Madam Chair, Representative, the Science Museum of Minnesota is pleased to, as we have already announced, say that we are creating the largest exhibition ever done on the Maya. It will premiere in June of this year here at the Science Museum of Minnesota. We went out and built the four museum partnership to finance this exhibit. Dr. Jolly has just returned from the country of Belize. The Belizeans have agreed to provide their national Mayan treasures as has the Harvard Peabody Museum for this exhibition, and the Belizeans have just agreed that we can then take the exhibit as after it is toured through the four museums on a six-year tour through this country. We are combining with it a film on the Maya. So both the exhibit and the film will premiere in June.
Madam Chair, I think that perhaps in June or thereabouts would be a good thing for the committee to do, to go to the Science Museum and view that.
Put it on our list.
Thank you.
Well, Representative McDonald. Rep. McDonald.
What did you call me? I'm sorry.
Sorry. Need to do it loud.
I was just recalling my first movie that I saw at the Theater of the Great Barrier Reef. It was quite memorable. And it does, as your literature states, it is the genesis, if you will, for school kids coming down to the Science Museum. But just curious on the cost now. It says, I see, it's $12 for, is that per group or per pupil? I'm just wondering what kind of money is brought in from the Omni Theater.
Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, yes, the Omni Theater, in terms of ticket sales revenue, exceeds its direct costs of operation. With that revenue, of course, we support a great many programs that are non-revenue generating at the Science Museum. One of our key operatives, certainly at the Science Museum, is accessibility, so that when you reference the ticket price to the museum, to the Omni Theater, to our special exhibits, you should be aware that there's a whole variety of pricing available, which is to say, I don't want to miss this opportunity to have the record indicate that the best value in the state is to be a member of the Science Museum of Minnesota, which will allow you during the year of your membership to come and see the exhibits and Omni Theater at no additional charge. I should also say we have a great number of programs to ensure that people, if they are not in a position economically to afford our listed ticket prices. For example, one of our programs is called a Great Ticks program. This is a program that we work with agencies throughout the state of Minnesota to identify those who may not have the economic means to attend the museum. We provide admission to the museum for as low as $3, and last year more than 48,000 people took advantage of the Great Ticks program to come to the Science Museum.
Follow up?
Yes, Representative
McDonald. Madam Chair, now I realize that IMAX and an Omni are two different things, but in your purchasing the new digital cameras, are you able to incorporate an IMAX type experience as well, therefore maybe offering additional movies to be, you know, viewed there and to collect more revenue?
Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, just to clarify some nomenclature, the film system that we currently use at the Science Museum's Omni Theater is an IMAX film projection system. And this partnership that we have built to develop the next generation of digital projection, the best in the world, we are partnering with Eastman Kodak as well as IMAX Corporation to do that. To your specific question of will we be able to show films after we have the digital system, we have already begun on an industry basis making the conversion of existing films to the digital format so that the Science Museum of Minnesota will be in a position to take its library of films that we originally produced that includes the Great Barrier Reef film that you mentioned, and we will be able to convert that to the digital format for continued exhibition. So when Brenda Rainey referenced the fact that we have created this new standards-based school field trip experience, the big weather experience that includes the Tornado Alley film, because we are a partner in the film, we have exhibition rights in perpetuity, including taking it to the digital projection format.
Madam Chair, and I appreciate you asking that you like to hear our stories, and so I just have a quick story related to your facility and what you've brought to my family. I work for Delta Airlines in my other life, and so we've been able to travel, and one of the things I try to do is when we're on a trip, I try to stop into a museum, whether it's an art museum or science museum, and So I've done this to my kids as they've grown up through the years, and they've claimed they suffered, but my son that is a chemist, he just bought one of your memberships. I think it's a Darwin level, perhaps. Is that, I think it's a, I thought it was something like a pretty substantial membership, and he's, and he, looks like Representative Kahn has one here. Pretty impressive. He's accepted at the U for chemistry, and so I'm kind of proud of him. But this is the first membership of, that I'm aware of that he's ever bought to anything, and to your facility and at the Darwin level, which, wow, he's going to be like Dr. Kahn here. I better not say that. She'll think I'm sucking up to her. Representative Kahn, I'll lower it. Thank you. So it's kind of a fun thing.
Okay, well, you know, as you know, I'm, as Representative Lilly, I'm clearly a strong supporter of the Science Museum, but I do, these numbers are, do give a little pause. It's, you're going from 1 million last year to asking for 2.2 million, which is 120%, which we don't do a lot in state budgeting. One of the questions I do have, and you know, I'm strongly agree with what you want to do with it, except one, I'm a little question about that middle one. Is the offerings for teachers and students? I assume you also get a general fund appropriation. Is that through Representative? Is that through Representative Murphy's committee?
Chairman Kahn, members, yes, we get a general fund appropriation, which is in Representative Murphy's committee, which we spoke to last week. Thank you. And we use that for our infrastructure support, so that we can have the type of pairings with other supporters that lead to approximately a $39 million budget. This is an incredible request, and we understand it. What is continuing is our $1 million over the biennium, $500,000 a year, desire to continue to take what we've acquired, the artifacts, the American Indian artifacts, particularly from the Whipple collection and other parts of our collection, and bring that into the state more fully before more students and more visitors. That part we desperately hope to continue as a core mission issue. We have a one-time addition to our request, and if funded, you should not see me back requesting money for an Omni Theater film again. I've said that to the camera. I can repeat it. We deeply want to continue the legacy of our Omni Theater, moving our films from 35 years of history and our past into our future, and to tell new stories as they become available. This will not be possible without an upgrade to the equipment. And this is it's an incredibly expensive program, one which ticket sales could never cover. It's, we believe, a key part of the legacy of Minnesota, known as a founder of the Omni tradition, Omni films and storytelling for science education. We want to split that cost with the state, and we're asking for the 1.2 additional million over the two-year period. More explicitly, we're asking for it to be split unevenly, $400,000 in the first biennium, $800,000 in the second year of the biennium, specifically because that's the way we can responsibly expense and spend it. And we are not looking to come back a third year to ask you for support on this unless I happen to get support in the first 2 years. In which case, I don't know what I will do.
Two questions. One, and that's not eligible for bonding support for capital investment. Have you asked that?
Expressly not eligible for capital investment or bonding support. It is not bricks and mortar. It's a technology transfer.
Well, I know there are many states that do make that eligible for bonding. I've always thought what we needed was a new Attorney General's opinion saying that those were eligible for bonding funds, because they are a continuing expense. It is interesting that if you're building a new building, all of the technology you put into the new building is eligible for bonding. But it's just adding, so it's a weird, kind of a weird circumstance.
Madam Chair, I would agree with you and with Representative Erdahl, who says you are creative and bold in your
Well, we can go to court and see what happens. But the our bonding person, our capital investment person, isn't here to be turning red or purple or whatever. But the other question I have is about that middle one, the offerings for teachers and students. I mean, big as our budget may seem to some people, the education budget is very, very much bigger than ours, just in its standard base. And why doesn't some of that come from the education budget?
Madam Chair, representatives, well, we would be delighted to find education budget support for our programs. However, in putting these programs together, our goal was to bridge from our legacy holdings and stories into another part of our community, not simply into the visitor community or into our travels to Greater Minnesota, which we've done with programming such as what's our science theater program? Yes, the stories. Suitcase science, where we open a suitcase and share artifacts in community centers, in treatment programs, in hospitals. We also want to reach students. And so we specifically called out our work with students in our presentation.
Okay. Any other questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I've been a fan of the Science Museum all my life. My parents had a membership, and they'd drag our family there. And growing up, sometimes it seemed a little boring, but as you get older, you start to understand and appreciate it a lot more. And I still go as an adult when I can. So I had a couple questions about ways that you may be looking to reduce costs and in what ways that you find efficiency in what you do. And then also kind of piggybacking off of that, do you have any kind of program where you can accept donations from people who are coming? I know the zoo does similar type things with that and with maybe allowing volunteers to help out. What are you exploring or what are you doing?
Madam Chair, Representative, one of the themes which has marked, I think, my leadership at the museum is a phrase that has been, over time, accepted by our staff, and that is, nonprofit is a tax status, not a business plan. And we are very clear that we want to run with the best efficiencies that we can. To that end, we find we have one of the largest volunteer programs in the state of Minnesota, with 1,600 registered volunteers, 1,200 active volunteers, giving the equivalent of 87 full-time employees, 40-hour weeks in their volunteer service. So we do use volunteers in an extraordinary way. We additionally have focused on ways to reduce our costs. It was fairly common for us to rent exhibits from other museums. We still do this on occasion. The cost is high, but it gives our visitors and students unique experiences that they can't see anywhere else. Today, the Science Museum of Minnesota is the largest exhibit construction company among science museums in the nation. We turn those margins into support for our teacher programs and subsidies for our teacher outreach programs. Additionally, for a small fee, we will not only design and build your exhibit for you, but we'll put it on our floor and test it. And so instead of paying the rental fee for those exhibits, which often go on tour, we charge to examine it, explore it, evaluate it, and provide fine-tuning to it. So we have reduced our rental costs and increased our income from rentals. We return as researchers. We have been very involved with the National Science Foundation. Among the community of museums, we have been in the top five in recipients of National Science Foundation funding. It's competitive research-based funding for the last 8 years. These are millions of dollars that we bring into the state's economy, which we use to, again, support creating programs that our students will benefit from and that our visitors will benefit from. So as a business, we have moved from very thin margins to having a growing endowment and an annual receipts from our donors of over $2 million a year, if I can figure right. And this and an endowment of now $38 million roughly, which we've been investing in performing in the top 25% of investment groups managed under our firm. So we do our best to stay efficient and stay lean. This still means that we have had involuntary staff reductions during thin times, that we have had cuts in the level of support that we give to our staff's retirement plans, and that our staff have not had a raise for 2 years. So life has been challenging in the nonprofit community. Nevertheless, we have continued to grow the people who we reach and the support that we give. I can tell you, as Mike Day referred to our Great Tickets program, as the economy turns south, the reliance of the community on the Science Museum of Minnesota for free and reduced admissions has skyrocketed. And we have trimmed our cost everywhere to be able to meet that demand. If I have a child who wants to come to the museum, we're not going to let a dime stand in their way.
Okay, thank you. Any other? Representative McDonald.
Since you asked, Madam Chair, thank you. Just curious on your, speaking of revenue, I think it was, 2007 when the Star Wars exhibit came. Was that a revenue builder for the Science Museum? It certainly got a lot of my money, so I'm curious.
Madam Chair, Representative, the attendance from Star Wars was very valuable to the museum, and we would love to bring it back. It has since been retired as an exhibit and is not available. The Science Museum of Minnesota was a part of the consortium that built that exhibit and received foundational funding for it. So it was something which had both reduced expenses in the creation and income associated with it. It was also the first major bump in our demand for free and reduced tickets.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Day, I'm just curious about what was your position in the Cleveland Public Schools?
Can you remember
Madam
that?
Chair, okay. Representative Murphy, I have a finance degree from a Big Ten university. I was awarded a New York State Arts Council grant to study museum management. I was then placed into the Cleveland Board of Education, and we, in essence, built a museum for specifically the Cleveland public school students.
As an employee of the educational system?
Yes, ma'am. To finish the story, 2 years after I went to work for the Cleveland Board of Education, the state had financial challenges, the Board of Education had financial challenges, and fortunately I was recruited to come to Minnesota not too much before we closed that supplemental education center.
And today do they have a museum?
Madam Chair, Representative, no, that facility has been closed since I left.
And Representative Kahn,
what?
Isn't it wonderful that we
that they closed
Mr. Day, and then that the people of Minnesota passed that 3A's money so that we can do amazing things that the Cleveland people never even thought of in that museum that they closed. And that our kids are thriving because of the atmosphere and opportunities that the Science Museum is presenting. And how cooperative they are with working with other entities that are also doing somewhat the same kind of thing for kids, like the Lake Superior Zoo.
Yes, but that's why we need to get to the Great Lakes Aquarium. So I don't want. I just do have one question for either the people testifying or the members of the committee. Today is an important science commemorative day, and does anyone know what it is? If you don't know what it is, you have to wait for my announcement on the House floor.
White
Representative,
smoke.
No?
Madam
Was
Chair.
Was there white smoke?
Yes.
Oh,
it's Pi Day.
That's not a science issue. Okay. What? Yes. I think you said so, yes.
Did you say an important science day?
Well, yeah, science and math, I would say, would go together. Did you say? I thought you said it.
Pi Day?
No. Yes.
That
3.14.
4589. Much further than I go.
But it was a childhood infatuation.
Okay. Pi Day. Today it's Pi Day. Right. We should have served pie.
Yes, for sure.
I didn't. Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you very much. We're on to the Great Lakes Aquarium. Just now? Does anyone know who the Pope is? McDonald, you should care. Do you know who the Pope is?
Yes.
Who?
He's from Argentina. His name is Argentina. His name is Bergoglio of Argentina.
Oh, okay. Right. We now have
the new Pope from Argentina.
Not the New York guy who is telling jokes. Okay. The Great Lakes Aquarium. Thank you.
Right.
Yes.
The next side of the world.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jack Lavoy. I'm Executive Director of Great Lakes Aquarium, and I'm here today with our Education Director, Sarah Erickson. And we want to give you a little overview of who we are, where we've been, where we are now, and where we'd like to go. Before I begin, in your packets, I believe you have a couple of items. One is a wayfinding guide, and we're going to be talking about a new exhibit development for the position on this map that is labeled Masters of Disguise. It's called our Sandra and Roger Karen Changeable Exhibit Gallery. In addition, you have this document, which I'm referring to as our inventory investment, our investment inventory in new exhibits over the past 5 years. And in addition, a booklet on our new proposed exhibit on Shipwrecks the Lion. There we go. Great Lakes Aquarium, our mission is to inspire people to explore their connection with Lake Superior and the waters of the world. And to do that, we provide the opportunity for firsthand observation and personal connection with animals and ecosystems. The aquarium provides both self-directed and guided experience for all ages, from preschoolers in our Whirligigs program, which most of the three-year-olds refer to as fish school, to volunteer divers, college interns, and the general public. By the numbers, officially we're called Lake Superior Center doing business as Great Lakes Aquarium, often referenced to, as you see in this slide, as Great Lakes Aquarium at Lake Superior Center. Lake Superior Center was incorporated in 1989, and Lake Superior Center Authority was created as a public corporation in the laws of Minnesota, Chapter 535 in 1990, and assigned an educational focus on freshwater and water-related issues. We opened to the public on July 29th in the year 2000. And as many of you know, the organization went through a period of some significant challenges during its initial startup years, and then spent 5 years under the management of Ripley's Leisure Entertainment until late 2007, when it returned to local control. And it was at that time that they asked me to be the executive director, with the charge to move the organization to a stable and sustainable basis. Revenue this year, as you'll see from the slide, is projected to be about $2 million, which is up 33% from where it was when I took over. Attendance at 127,000 is up about 20% from what it was at that time. And we are now focused on maximizing our impact on each of our 62,000 square feet. In order to fulfill our education mission, we have an innovative education program. 10,000 students go through our facility through structured programming on a given year. In addition, we do field trips, outreach activities, and our cadre of five educators also conduct science institutes for teachers, with the most recent series focusing on the impacts of our floods. Long-distance learning through a new interactive video conferencing studio that we just recently built and equipped is now beginning to model, test, and implement a series of interactive video lessons projected in classrooms throughout classes in northeastern Minnesota. We have the capability with that program actually to do classes anywhere in the world, and to also bring classes from the world into Great Lakes Aquarium. Demand for our education program has outgrown our original first floor classrooms, and we needed additional capacity. We were able to convince the caterer that had a large catering kitchen and underutilized cafeteria in our building to remove those facilities, providing us with 2,500 square feet on our second floor to redevelop. We have since then developed plans for three new classrooms, a teacher resource center where we provide actual teacher kits to teachers throughout the region, each kit complete for an entire class, and to enhance our IVC capabilities, and a space we're calling our Great Lakes Exploratorium. In fact, we recently received a $125,000 grant from Minnesota Power to help make this happen, with a $100,000 matching challenge grant, for which we have already generated commitments for $57,000, and we just have begun undertaking our campaign. We also have been focused on exhibit development. The sheet that I pointed out earlier sort of lists the projects we've been engaged in for the past 5 years, and there is an excellent illustration of what they entail on the back of the shipwrecks booklet. We focused first on the existing facility. There were a number of exhibits that were either operating on aging technology that were broken or needed to be enhanced or repaired. In the first 6 months of 2008, we invested nearly $50,000 out of our own resources to do so, or $42,000. We then focused on our first new exhibit, which was the Amazing Amazon. We took an entire gallery, we relocated some items to another part of the facility and created a high-impact water experience called the Wall of Water, which opened up a gallery where we created a new exhibit called the Amazing Amazon in collaboration with the Shedd Aquarium in Chicago, which kindly donated a lot of fish that we helped start populating that exhibit. Next, we collaborated with the U.S. Forest Service, with particularly the Superior National Forest, in honor of their 100th anniversary, and we built a new freshwater forest exhibit on our second floor in an underutilized gallery to focus on the role forest played in water quality. Following that, we went into the exhibit we want to redo today and replaced our Seahorse Secrets exhibit with a new one called Masters of Disguise, where we focus on animals that use camouflage either to protect themselves from being eaten or to give them an advantage in creeping up on prey in pursuit of their food. That's in its third year, and we'll be removing that. Following that, we didn't want to lose seahorses, and we also wanted to build the coral reef, so we created another exhibit called Global Connections. Following that, we received a $134,000 grant through the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative to do a special exhibit on aquatic invaders, and UMD graduate students helped us with an interactive animated exhibit called Repel the Invasion. So we have a lot of experience, and we've done most of those on our own. If you notice, we invested over $561,000 in new exhibits in the past 5 years, 60% of that which we provided on our own, nearly all of that which we built on our own. We are now, in fact, engaged Nice to be here in conjunction with the Science Museum. They've been one of our most valued partners. We're presently engaged in a $65,000 renovation of our Origins Gallery on our second floor to showcase the evolution of life over time in the present-day Great Lakes Basin in northeastern Minnesota. And the Science Museum of Minnesota has been most helpful to us in providing us input to them. There's curatorial area for guidance and coaching, and also to provide us with access to their fossil collection to enhance our exhibit in Duluth. Our design team has excellent construction capabilities, artistic talents, and we have a group with a good proven record that will bode well for the exhibit we're about to discuss. And so today, we'd like to talk to you about our latest new exhibit, proposed exhibit, Shipwrecks Alive. It's in the changeable exhibit gallery I mentioned to you earlier. And with the rest of the aquarium, that gallery is most often used to provide a saltwater focus. Shipwrecks Alive will provide us a little bit of both. And to explain that exhibit, I'd like to call on Sarah Erickson, our education director, to walk you through what we hope to achieve.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairwoman and representatives. There's something so uniquely fascinating about shipwrecks. It's particularly true in our region with a strong maritime tradition. And the story of how the ship went down, the history component, has been told many times in various ways by wonderful organizations. But we're looking forward to telling the story of what happens after the ship sinks. What happens under the waves? These stories vary depending on the location of the ship's resting place, the nature of the vessel, the time period, and its subsequent contact with people and wildlife. So the exhibit we're proposing and seeking funds for will include content and experiences.
Representative Pass.
So, Madam Chair, I was just so anxious that I thought she was going to give us at least the answer to the first question. Which animals inhabit a wreck first? Sorry, I just couldn't resist.
That's a great question. Small things often inhabit the wreck first. Small things with sticky feet. So hold on. That's a great question, and we hope to be able to tell you more about that story as we develop the exhibit. Thank you, Representative.
Okay.
We're hoping to immerse people in the experience to provide context for to better understand three unique shipwreck stories. For instance, we're going to explore the history of navigation. How and why have people used boats over time? What are the physics behind boats floating in the first place? We'll look at how people are exploring shipwrecks, what they're learning, and what the environmental impacts of those shipwrecks on the habitat are. The first wreck story that we'll showcase is a shipwreck from 1928. It's been very well preserved in the cold, nutrient poor waters of Lake Superior. We've chosen the SS America as an example wreck for this particular storyline of preservation in cold waters because of people's regional familiarity with it as an accessible, popular dive site in Isle Royale National Park. It's a vessel that's had a presence in North Shore communities throughout the life throughout its sailing life. And we also have a professional network. In building exhibits, we reach out to a vast array of resources and people and talent, and that network is particularly strong around the America. This professional network that's very familiar with this wreck will provide us with access to images, video, artifacts that will help us tell the story. In fact, one of our regular scuba divers, you can see him on Wednesday afternoons in our largest exhibit, Feeding Fish, is a relative of the gentleman who unfortunately was at the helm the night the ship went down and has some artifacts and stories to share related to that. We also have a relationship with a family that had at one time the salvage rights to this wreck, which is a great local connection. We envision, this is what it looks like underwater, but we envision building an experience that transports visitors to this place to explore both the ship's history and the ecosystem it rests in. Visitors will be able to walk into the wreck and learn more about the wildlife that calls the America home today. They'll learn about other Great Lakes wrecks and weather patterns that have such an influence on the maritime community on the Great Lakes. The second wreck that we'll be featuring will be the backbone of exploring the world of marine archaeology. Wrecks of the Mediterranean are unique in some ways in that many of them exist only as debris fields of cargo. Marine shipworms are part to blame for this. They're one reason that that wooden structure of things like ancient Roman vessels have disappeared. Pictured here, a collection of amphora pots used at one time to transport things like fish sauce and olive oil and wine all throughout the Mediterranean and the Atlantic. In this portion of the exhibit, visitors will encounter the outline of a stylized Roman vessel and experience what it feels like to descend onto a wreckage field as if you're scuba diving underwater. We'll explore techniques used by archaeologists to study these sites and help us further our understanding of ancient societies. Our final wreck story features the ghost fleet of the Truk Lagoon in the Pacific Ocean. It's the resting place for hundreds of fully loaded Japanese planes and ships that sunk over a three-day period in February of 1944. It's part of an intense air and naval battle called Operation Hailstone. This conglomerate of shipwrecks is located within a protected atoll, which has allowed colonization by wildlife over the past 60-plus years. The story of wrecks becoming habitat is a wonderful and colorful, engaging one to tell. In this section of the exhibit, we'll feature the natural succession and colonization that takes a wreck from a vehicle to an ecosystem, so small things with sticky feet attaching first and building out over time. We'll showcase the cacophony of life that overtakes structures at the bottom of the sea, particularly in these nutrient-rich waters. This, in particular, is a wonderful example of this shipwrecks alive concept, that story waiting under the waves for us to take people to. And at this point, Madam Chairwoman and representatives, I'd like to turn it over to Jack to tell you a little bit about what it's going to take to make this exhibit a reality. Mr. LaVoy.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, we're eager to undertake this exhibit throughout this fall and construct it over the winter and open it in May of next year prior to the summer tourist season. Our budget for the exhibit is $200,000 for the various elements that constitute the hardware and the facade and the life support systems needed to make this a viable, livable experience. In addition to that cost, there's about another additional $70,000 cost, which we are planning to undertake. $20,000 of which will be some of the salaries associated with constructing it, and $50,000 to purchase the animals to inhabit the gallery. It's a particularly expensive exhibit for life in that Pacific fish are expensive and hard to come by, and they'll make up about a third of the population we're going to have on display. So this is really a $270,000 project, and we're asking the committee to consider $200,000 for the hardware to make it happen. So with that, Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I want to thank you for your time. We'd be happy to answer any questions.
Is there any contribution from the area, from the Lake Superior or the City of Duluth or whoever's responsible for it?
Well, in this particular year, as I mentioned, we've been raising $265,000 for our new exploratorium for our classroom. And in a community the size of Duluth, that starts to tap out our corporate and individual donors. And then in addition to that, we're looking at $65,000 that we're investing as within the next several months in our new origins redo. And so between those two, that's $350,000. That pretty well maxes us out in a city our size in that remoter location.
Any other questions? Representative
McDonald. Thank you, Representative McDonald. Well, since we have time, I must ask the question why you wouldn't be doing an exhibit on the Edmund Fitzgerald, or maybe you have already.
Well, it's obviously, everyone knows about the Edmund Fitzgerald. It's just that because of its proximity to Isle Royale, and Isle Royale's notoriety as being sort of a shipwreck haven, and its size, and the fact that we have this opportunity to possibly display the spiral staircase from within the wreck, and portholes and sinks and dishes and artifacts. That's one thing. The other thing is, because of the depth, the Fitzgerald is at a quite deep location. It's not readily studyable or accessible for, you know, evaluating the wildlife. So this just seems, our focus is on the wildlife more than the wreck, but no one hardly ever comes to Duluth without being aware of the Fitzgerald. We may have our theme song in that gallery be the Gales of November. Nice.
Representative, if I might add that several years ago in that same gallery, we featured an exhibit called The Abyss, which was a Ripley's exhibit that we tailored to our space. And as part of that, we did an extension about deep waters of Lake Superior, and the Edmund Fitzgerald was a featured piece of that extension when we talk about deep water in the lake. And I will tell you that that lovely Gordon Lightfoot song is now permanently ingrained in many of our staff's psyches after hearing it.
And I can say in late October, early November, we always have a Gales of November weekend in Duluth where people come together to talk about that and celebrate the storms and underwater archaeology and historic preservation. So it's part of our annual fabric of life up there.
Representative Ernold.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And in thinking about storms, you had one there last summer. Are you safe from floods where you are?
Well, actually, we are adjacent to the bay, but we're up rather high. But interestingly, you should ask, it was our 500-year flood. And after I was able to figure out how to get into town that day, we had some flooding where I live as well, at Pike Lake. We did get there. About 10 o'clock in the morning of June 20th, the water table began to rise, on which we sit as the bay and the rivers were swelling. And water started to come percolating up through the basement floor where we have our offices, through every separation joint and crack and crevice it could find. And we did experience modest flooding by what was going on around us. But for us as a nonprofit, it was a fairly sizable, about $56,000 or $60,000 worth of damage. Fortunately, we do cover flood insurance, and they had a $25,000 deductible, and so we were able to get FEMA to provide us with that. And so out of the cloud came a silver lining. We all have now nice new redone walls in the offices that had to be replaced because of mold. It's all repainted, new carpeting, and it looks like $1 million. So we did get a new office and break area out of it, but. And we also sealed the floors so that that unexpected occurrence could never happen again.
Representative Murphy on this?
I saw it. And it doesn't look like $1 million. It looks very nice.
And
very conservative. And you know that FEMA doesn't pay anything more than what it was worth on the day before the flood. It looks very nice, clean, and non-moldy.
Mr. Lavoy thinks he's an entrepreneur. He's forgotten his days as a state representative.
Well, I have to say that it was $1 million in in-kind labor. We painted our own offices. We did our own wall repairs, and it was about $30,000 worth of carpet, which isn't $1 million.
And they can work. They work very hard, and they can feel proud of the job well done.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Hausen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question is for you, because I've been off this committee for a couple of years.
So
I'm not altogether sure now. When and if this isn't the appropriate time to answer the question, another time. When does an entity come directly to us? In this case, they've presented and they're asking us for a very specific budget purpose. And when do we put them through, as we do with the children's museums, through a grant program where somebody else, I mean, in this sense, it sounds as though the Humanities Commission says, well, if you're a children's museum, give us an application that might meet these criteria.
Madam Chairman, was advised by the chairman of the Lake Superior Center Authority that as a creature of the state that we would directly appeal to the state.
Right. No, I'm not making a comment about this is a great thing. What I'm just confused about is When does, I mean, in the case of the Children's Museum, we put them under a grant program.
I think we've had a good answer, is that this is a creature of the state parallel with the Humanities Commission instead of something that's separate. And the specific answer is, I don't know. And he said, I've been away from this committee for a while too. So let's go to the two previous chairs to give us directions as to what we're supposed to do. I think one of them seems to really favor this project, but let's go to the other one.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and members. And basically, it's been done different ways, and we did do the Children's Museums, through the humanities, and some seemed more appropriate to just do direct appropriations from our committee. But well, we usually often go through some type of pass through, but it just depends on what works. I mean, frankly, some of it is just what works to pass it the best. Maybe we won't have that trouble this year, but we have the latitude to do it how we wish to do it.
And Madam Chair, my only reason for asking the question, it always seems to me that if you give the granting authority to an entity, they have the possibility of shaping a mission of the agency to which they're granting. I mean, I use the Children's Museum as the example because perhaps they would like to come to us with a whole different approach to an exhibit, but they're put through a granting agency that might set up different parameters for what's necessary to apply for a grant.
Well, I hope we have something to say about what the granting parameters are, and to answer if someone has complaints about them, to respond to those complaints. I do prefer as many things as possible to go through a granting authority or an oversight authority. I really don't want us to have a 250 line item bill to every separate institution, institution in the state. But we'll just have to see. I'm not sure where this should go, but we'll just have to see how it works out.
And Madam Chair, that's why we did that. I mean, we didn't want to become a mini bonding committee here and do every single program that comes before us. And it does work to go through granting authorities. And in terms of parameters, we can and have set them. And for the most part, I think it's worked pretty well. And if there are, questions, we can make those accommodations. But generally, I think the money has been spent in the manner that we intended it to be.
And so, for example, I know from having been on the Environment Finance Committee, we don't tell DNR what they're going to do, what parks they're going to do, and exactly.
It's a bad idea. Nobody tells DNR what to do.
But they usually present us with what they intend to do. And I imagine if they greatly deviate from that, we would ask them about it. Same thing with the Regional Parks Commission and the Metro Parks. They come with a specific list of where, what's their direction and who gets what in what order of preference and so forth. And I imagine if there was any strong deviation from, I don't recall if we write that into, I kind of think we don't write it into statutes, but it is in the working papers of the committee, which might have some authority or not if there was a distinction. But we do, I know at least for LCMR, we were very amenable to people coming to us with, a reworking of what they wanted to do and so forth. But I don't think they just went off and did it by themselves. So.
Madam Chair, the Lake Superior Center Authority that was created in 1990 consists of five members who are appointed by the governor. And so the board that exists today has been recently reappointed. by Governor Dayton. One of the seats is reserved for the commissioner of the DNR or his designee. Its chair right now is the former commissioner of administration here. We feel like, well, this is where we belong because we are our own entity.
Representative
Verdo. Thank you, Madam Chair. Did you receive any money from Legacy Committee last year?
No, Madam Chairman, Representative Verdo, we have not received any state money since the year 2000.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's why I can't remember where we put the money for you, because you didn't get any.
Right. We haven't since that last bonding money to build the facility.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
After we do all this, are you also going to do guided tours to do scuba diving from shipwrecks?
Pardon me?
I want to know if you're going to do anything more interesting than just having us look at shipwrecks in your museum. Are you going to do guided tours of scuba diving around shipwrecks?
Madam, it's absolutely. That's something that we have a line of people out the door volunteering to lead. We have a really incredible dive community in the Duluth Superior area, and we've been brainstorming ways to get people out on the water more.
One of the things I did several years ago and got enough flack for it that I actually didn't repeat it again every year was I did do a bill for a shipwreck state park in the state. Michigan has one. The state of Michigan has a shipwreck state park. And a lot of people sort of laughed at it. I think someone asked me how I got the idea, and I said it was because my husband was a scuba diver and he had dived on some wrecks in Lake Superior. So I was accused of doing it for my own benefit, and my answer was clear. It was clearly to my own benefit to have my husband diving in Cancun, Jamaica, Barbados, and so forth, as opposed to Lake Superior. It didn't matter anyway.
Madam Chair, we do actually offer scuba diving camp in the summer basically older kids, including an off-site scuba experience. And I'm aware of your scuba park idea, and I like it.
You should get the local Duluth legislator to put it in this time.
But this exhibit we want above water. But we have been advised, actually, through our friends in Sea Grant, that in the lower lakes, even though the waters are cold and so forth, they're having problems because of zebra mussels beginning to inundate the hard structures of the existing wreck. That hasn't been a challenge because of the cold and deep waters in our lake so far. I mean, we have zebra mussels around Duluth, but not up at Aurora.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, move on. Meeting adjourned.